Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Not Suitable for Anyone. As always, I am your host, Patrick Anderson, and today my guest is the one and only Matt Stewart. Hey, Matt.
Hey, what is up?
How's it going, man?
It is going. It is definitely going.
That's awesome. So Matt, how familiar you are with the podcast. But I came up with this idea, a few months back. It's something I've kind of been stewing on for a while, because, I'd been doing these lists over at Modern Horrors for a really long time, sort of highlighting a lot of like these underseen, horror movies.
Yeah.
And, and Tonight She Comes was one that kind of kept, popping up on a bunch of those lists. And I finally just decided to say, fuck it. I'm just going to start doing a whole show where, that's just all we talk about is stuff that, that no one's watching.
That is awesome. No, yeah, I love the name. The name is great. And Modern Horrors too. I always like thumbs up to Modern Horrors, because like I've always gotten a ton of love from the site.
Awesome, man. Well, so yeah. So I wanted to talk about Tonight She Comes today. It's been out for a couple of years now. And, pretty widely available. I know it was on Amazon Prime for a long time.
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime and like Tubi and like basically like pretty much every streaming service in terms of like buying a movie, and then a good amount of like ones where you can watch it for free with a subscription too.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like, I think it's like $5 on iTunes.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not bad.
So yeah, so it's out there, and and some people are finding it, but not enough, man. I think it's a really killer movie. It's really funny. So I really dig it. So I'd love to kind of get into it with you.
Yeah, definitely.
So one of the things that really sort of jumps out at me, and I think you can't help but notice this after, I mean, even the first time through, maybe you're not really sure what's going on, but certainly after a couple of watches, once you sort of know where it's going, it starts out with this very serious tone, like, between the music and the lighting and the cinematography and stuff, it's all like very intense. But then as you start to watch it and as the story unfolds, you've got characters that are like doing and saying some of the most ridiculous shit that I've ever heard. It's kind of a weird feeling where, maybe the first time you're through, you're like, you're seeing some things and going, wait, is this supposed to be funny? And then, I think by the end, and then I think certainly like once you've seen it and you go back and rewatch it, you're like, yeah, this is definitely supposed to be funny. You're sort of like taking some of these familiar tropes and sort of turning them around in their head. So, what's the sort of overall kind of influence and thing that you're trying to get across here?
Yeah, no, you pretty much nailed it. Like, that's pretty spot on. Like, for whatever reason, like, I really just love having the like dead serious look while even doing super ridiculous shit or like comedic shit. And I definitely even killed some of the jokes in the movie due to having like serious music while they're happening. Like in earlier cuts, it was like funnier, but I was like, I don't care if I ruin this joke by like having this like creepy serious music over it, just because I love like the tone that it sets. And I think there's like something where, I don't know, like characters that are just not self-aware. Like, I don't think really, other than Pete, maybe like no one's really aware that they're being funny in the movie, and like everything's serious to them, even if it's really insane. So I kind of just like that whole mix of like ridiculousness and seriousness. And like, I don't know, even if I was making a flat out comedy, which I don't think Tonight She Comes is, I do think it's definitely meant to be funny, but I still would like, I just love like the style of like shooting something like it's not a comedy. Like, I don't think I would ever shoot something like it was a, like meant to look like a comedy. So like, I always appreciate that about like classic films where it's like, this looks like fucking legit and it's really funny, but like, it doesn't, it's not like playing on any sort of visual comedic styles that are like killing the look of the film just for the sake of a joke.
Right.
So yeah, that's like something that all, like, pretty much no matter what I do, it's like, I don't know. I just like shooting things in that kind of style.
Yeah, that's cool. It's, what am I trying to say here? It's, there's like this dichotomy, I guess, between, you know, sort of the look and the tone. And then, you know, when you take a step back and you realize sort of what's happening and what they're doing.
I think just to interrupt for a second too, yeah. I think a little bit of it too comes from the fact that, like, just in my regular life, it's nearly impossible for me to, like, not say stupid shit or be funny, like, in the most serious of moments, which it says a lot, I guess, that I have a great friend group now that, like, is also cool with that kind of stuff. Cause I've definitely been around people before where I'm, like, saying things during, like, really serious events or, you know, things that are going on, and they're just annoyed. but to me, I just can't help it. Like, I don't know. It's just like, even if, like, the worst shit ever is going on, like, there's still room for stuff to be funny.
No, I'm right there with you. And I think maybe that's why this movie, you know, speaks to me so much, because I'm the exact same way. And I've had this conversation before with people, because, like, there are people that will tell you that, you know, you can't joke about this or that or whatever. And I think that's, like, maybe there's some things we should take very seriously, but a lot of times humor can sort of help us learn how to, like, help us, like, process our feelings and things like that. And sometimes it can just diffuse tension.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, like, I don't, even if you're, like, you could even be taking something seriously and joke about it, and, like, it's not, like, making the thing less serious or important or whatever, but it's just, like, I don't know, I feel like it helps for sure.
Yeah. I think the part that really kind of cements things for me is the first after the opening stinger, like when we first meet Adam and Nathan's characters. You know, you've got this really intense score, and he's driving out through the country, and he's, like, delivering the mail, and it almost has this kind of, like, Halloween vibe.
Yeah.
And then you get like the heavy breathing trope. You know, and where you think, like, okay, yeah, like, you know, it's like someone's, you know, someone's going to pop out and follow him or something. And no, it's just Adam Hartley, like, jerking off in the back seat of the car.
Something's about to pop out, but it's not the killer.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, and he just kind of looks up as if, like, why do you have a problem with this?
Oh yeah. There, it's, I don't know, that's, like, one of those things that it's great that he was a good friend of mine, because there's so, it, what's really funny, I cut out, like, so much masturbation from the movie, and it was a weird process, because I cut so much out, but I also added extra in, like, after the fact with, like, additional shoots. So, like, honestly, maybe there's about the same amount that was in the script now, but it's just, like, different from what was initially conceived.
That's amazing.
It was a constant battle. Like, should Pete be jerking off in this scene or not?
Yeah, yeah, because that comes back again later. I want to get there, but first, just talking about Adam Hartley a little bit. He's an incredibly talented guy. And you've worked with him before on your first feature, Rewind, and I know he's into writing and stuff. He made that film Revisions, which I also really liked. And he's just a really, really talented guy and really funny guy.
Yeah, no, he's great. I've worked with him on so many things. It's been a while now. Last time I saw him was about a year ago at Fantastic Fest, because we used to live in the same city. We live in two different places, like, super far apart now, but I used to shoot so much stuff with him. I had this, like, little web series going for a while that he's in basically every one of them. That those were, like, super fun to make, and I think that was, like, just right before Rewind. But yeah, I knew him probably for, like, a year or two before we made Rewind, and then we just, like, got along so well that we're like, we gotta just make a movie. just the two of us, because we're like trying to do all this no budget shit that like kept falling apart. So we're like, all right, if it's just us two, like, it can't fall apart. So, but yeah, he's great. He always adds like a lot to that kind of stuff. And yeah, he's open to doing ridiculous shit, which is a plus for me for any actor.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, cause his character goes some strange places, cause he's, for whatever reason, I guess he's just super horny. He's like masturbating in the backseat while his buddy's delivering mail.
I mean, he's kind of like he's the weirdest character in the movie for sure too, because he's like barely even connected to the rest of the plot. Right. Like there actually definitely was an earlier cut of the movie where I'm 100% sure that everyone would hate his character and probably hate the movie if I had left it the way it was, because there was a good chunk and like a whole subplot with him that got cut out. And it was funny to me, but it kind of derailed the movie a little bit, because like you just want to get back to like what's supposed to, like, you know, the plot of the movie and like what's happening, and it's just derailed by like him wandering through the woods.
Yeah. Well, because it's like, you know, they're at this dead end, and he just runs off into the woods to take a shit, and then, you know, his buddy never comes back to pick him up. But instead of like, you know, waiting by the side of the road or like walking down the road they were just on, he's just like out randomly roaming through the woods.
Yeah, exactly.
I
feel like a little bit of that, weirdly enough, I feel like a lot of the movie does come in some way from like stuff I've experienced or like people that I know, not exactly to the same extent of insanity, but I, you know, it's like everyone's got their friend that like would do some stupid shit like that, and you're just like, just why didn't you just stay there? Like, we could have found you, and now you're like, you're nowhere to be found. You're like in the middle of nowhere. You have no cell service. You're just like out there.
Right. Yeah, it makes no sense. But Nathan's character, James, I mean, he doesn't fare a whole lot better, because he's supposed to be delivering the mail, and instead he just goes and like takes a nap.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about his character too, Nathan's fucking great. And he, I think, killed that role. And it's sort of a tough role, in my opinion, to do, because the character really sucks. And he, like, he's useless, but he, like, he's kind of the main character. So he has to come up, like, you can't just hate him or else
the
movie's just really annoying. So, like, I had some other people read for the role, and it's like, you just immediately were annoyed by him. And then he was able to be charming despite, like, being a fucking idiot, which I really appreciated. And, you know, despite like, he makes every wrong decision, and he's like, I don't know. That's also my favorite character in like a slasher too. Like basically like the first group of people that gets killed off in any slasher film is my favorite character. So like, I just basically wanted to make a movie where like everyone was that character, and most of them don't die until the end.
That explains a lot, actually.
It really like annoyed. Like, I love slasher films, but I'm always so fucking annoyed when like the most interesting characters get killed off right away, and then I usually hate the people that make it to the end, and like I'm just rooting for like the slasher at that point.
Yeah. No, I get that, and I can see that. Yeah, because you do see that often. I'm blanking on the guy's name, but the guy from Friday the 13th Part 3, played all the pranks.
Yeah, he's fucking awesome. I'm going to be terrible at remembering people's names right now too, so my brain is fried. But dude from Texas Chainsaw in the wheelchair, like my favorite character.
Oh yeah.
Like that type of character I love so much.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm going to probably going to drive people nuts. I'm going to go back and forth between like calling these guys by like their character names or the actor names. And I'm not going to even apologize for that. It's going to happen.
just keep IMDb handy.
Just cause like I feel like since I've seen like, and particularly since I've seen Adam in you know, in several things now. I feel like I kind of know that, because I know people don't like the characters that he tends to play. Yeah. So
yeah, there's a couple. I've worked on some more stuff with him too that I hope comes out at some point. We've shot it like a while ago at this point, but I would be really interested to see it that I haven't seen yet, and I probably can't even say anything about, and it might not ever come out. But there's been more, not directed by me, but shot by me and like collaborated by me kind of stuff with Adam.
Oh, that's cool.
It's crazy. Of course.
Yeah, no, that's all. I mean, I definitely will watch more of him, because I think he's great. But as sort of people, as human beings, the main, you know, male characters are, you know, are kind of shitty people.
They suck for sure. Other than the main girls and not the cult, and not obviously not anyone in the cult, like every other character in this movie, like in real life, they fucking suck. Like you would hate you know, they're like people that you would hate in real life. But that's, I don't know, that's the kind of people I love in a movie.
Yeah, and it's hilarious because then you've got Ashley and Lindsay, and I think these are two actresses also that I want to see more of, both Larissa and Kamisha. I think they're both really talented.
They're great.
And anyway, so we get sort of the first introduction to them in that opening stinger where they're in the car driving, and it's kind of cutting between them and, you know, and Christy, who's sort of like running, you know, through the woods. And yeah, so you go places here that you don't often see, in particular that you don't often see from male filmmakers and male, you know, screenwriters, because there's a lot of menstruation jokes in this movie.
I don't know. There's just something funny about like period jokes, or like even periods in real life. Like there's one, it's just such a natural thing. So like it's so funny, the reaction, like by far, and this is jumping way ahead in the movie, but the whole like period blood scene by far always got the biggest reaction in theaters. And like, to me, it's not like it is gross, but to me, it's just funny. And like, it had like a good reaction of like people, mostly dudes, being like horrified by it, and then girls just either think it was funny or like not really caring. But I don't know, there, it's just like something you have to deal with, and it's, to me, it's just funny.
Yeah, no, it's a taboo thing that you know, that just doesn't get talked about, it just doesn't get shown, it's like it's completely ignored.
Oh yeah, for sure. I certainly have not seen a lot of, especially in like horror. I feel like if anything, it would be like in like a drama or something. But yeah, I haven't really seen a lot of that either.
Yeah, I'm going to give a shout out to another podcast that I listen to called Breaking the Glass Slipper, and it's by these women from. Some of them from England, some of them may be from the States, but they did a whole episode about that, and you know, where they went into like stuff like survival horror, you know, like zombie films and stuff, where people are like on the run and it might be like months at a time, and they're like, what are these women doing? You know, like it's just not mentioned, like it's like it doesn't even exist.
You're in a situation where like the zombies are probably be able to sniff you out better if that's happening, but it's just never mentioned. It really should be.
Yeah. But have you seen a movie called It Stains the Sands Red?
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
Yeah. That's one where the entire movie like centers around a woman's period. It's a zombie film, and like she essentially like it's sort of like a My Pet Zombie thing. Like she eventually like figures out how to not necessarily tame this thing, but sort of control it and get it to go where, you know, where she needs to go. And she like has to use her tampon to do that. It's really amazing.
Check this out.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd like it. But yeah, I mean, you get, there's another one I saw recently. It was the Black Christmas remake.
I want to see it. Maybe I'll watch it now, like now that it's Christmas is coming up. But yeah, no, I never saw it. I wanted to.
It wasn't very well received, but I will say that it is very like Christmassy. So, you know, like if you like that in a, you know, in a Christmas horror movie, you know, it definitely like sort of nails the mood.
I fucking love a Christmas movie. I want to make a Christmas horror movie so bad.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's my that's one of my favorites. I'm in the middle of like I'm in the middle of a Christmas horror binge right now because I'm gonna like plan some episodes and, you know, later in November and December on some Christmas movies. So I've been watching a lot of them lately, but yeah, there's a joke in there about a diva cup.
Nice. And I know of diva cups.
It's hilarious. It's like sort of adolescent humor that you'd normally expect from guys. So, but because it's all like the women in a frat house, like it's really unexpected, but yeah. So I thought it was kind of hilarious, and it was really surprising to see awesome. Something if like super mainstream.
It like makes me wish I had known about Diva Cups when I made Tonight She Comes, because I probably would have like, they're just drinking from the Diva Cup and there's no, there's no like chalice.
Oh man. Yeah. That'd be amazing. So, that's the other thing about Tonight She Comes that it's doing that I really love. And it reminds me of a movie that came out a long time ago now. It was almost 10 years ago now, called Kill List.
Oh yeah, I love Kill List. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
And it's great, except but Kill List, like you're following these guys through through their story in the movie. And then in the last like 15 minutes, it's like they literally just walk onto the set of a completely different movie.
Yeah.
And now they're in that movie. And you kind of have the same thing here, except it happens more at like the halfway point, where you have these two sets of characters that are each in their own movie. And you have them kind of meet at the midpoint. And now all of a sudden they have to like deal with each other.
Yeah, for sure. That definitely was a plan too. I just find like something about that, and it even goes back to like the blending of like the serious visuals and music with like funnier stuff of like, I just like the like genre blending, or, you know, like one character suddenly walks into like a totally different movie kind of feel to something. It just like makes like, even if I'm not making the movie, if I'm just watching it, it's like so much more exciting for me if like the movie just goes in a place where I'm like, holy shit, like this is not at all the movie I thought this is going to be. Even if I hated it, I'd rather have it be that than like I knew, you know, exactly what the structure of the movie was like without even watching it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. And that's kind of, and you can kind of see, because I guess it sort of, you know, finally kind of explains like what a lot of the POV shots are, from, you know, from the first act are kind of paid off, you know, sort of here at the midpoint, and things all kind of start to come together, but the movie just throws you into all this and doesn't really explain any of it. And I know that, you know, that you don't like, exposition. So
I fucking hate exposition so much. Yeah, that's fair. And I don't like, definitely some people have been like confused by Tonight She Comes and by Rewind, but I don't, to me that neither of them is really confusing at all. And I don't like, you might not get exactly what's going on, but I don't really care about, you know, that's fine.
But it doesn't matter, right?
It doesn't matter. And like, you understand like vaguely, like as long as you get like, unless you're so confused by the movie that you had like literally no idea what was happening or why anyone was doing anything, then I probably failed as a storyteller. but yeah, like just exposition of stuff. It's just, you know, some people can do it really well and props to them, because that's like a crazy talent to be able to do exposition that's not super boring and like slowing the story to a halt. But yeah, it's like Tonight She Comes, there's never like, in my mind for sure, like it never wanted to just fully explain anything. And Rewind specifically, we were like, anytime there even would be exposition from the characters talking, we're just cutting that shit out. And it's not going to be on camera, because like we're like, why would they film this? It's pointless.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And I think, yeah, and I think, I mean, that's one of the things I like about Rewind as well, is because there's a lot of If people don't know, Rewind is I guess you call it a found footage movie.
Yeah, and it's like in the loosest sense, I guess, a found footage, because like there is music to it, and you know, so like it really breaks the rules of found footage. But that was another thing where I was just like, I think I did have an early cut of it with no music, and I was just like, it's just not as good. So I'm like, I don't care if I have to break the found footage rules and if I'm putting music in, if it makes it more entertaining.
No, you know, I watched The Sacrament.
Yeah.
And the big thing about The Sacrament is there's like one point at about halfway through the movie where, there's a quick sort of like, there's a quick set of dialogue which establishes that, oh, the photographer can shoot video too. So he starts shooting B-roll. And that's where you get the multiple camera angles start coming in to play at that point.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really well done. Except then, like, at the very end, when they're grabbing all their shit and they're leaving the camp and, like, running back to the helicopter, you actually see from the second camera, which is sitting on the desk, you see them run out the door, and then it cuts to the main camera, and it cuts to them running, and they left the second camera behind. And so I was sitting there going, no, wait a minute, you motherfuckers. Like, you don't have any of that footage.
Yeah, how is this footage found? Well, I guess they could have just gone back. Like, if everyone dies, like, they could have just taken it. You know, they're going to, like, collect the dead, and they're like, let's grab this camera, too.
Right, yeah. But I'm like, yeah, if you can get away with that, you can get away with a little music. You know, makes things more interesting, at least.
Yeah, there's definitely something about... I think it even comes down to like the screenplay level too, where it's like, okay, this is like what a screenplay should be. And like, it's not that I'm saying like I'm better than what a screenplay should be, but I am like, it's just so boring though to like adhere to those structures. And like, I'm not a fucking maniac that writes a screenplay that's like 100% different than what a screenplay should look like. But, easily by far my favorite screenplay, and especially the formatting of it, is the original Alien script. And it's written in such a different way than most screenplays, where like every line is just one instead of like paragraphs, which just are boring. Like, screenplays are so boring to read. So instead of doing that, it just has like one single line with a period. And each line is like its own sentence. And it's just like, Ripley does this, this happens, this happens. And there's no like fluff of like, you know, like describing characters like in detail. And it's just like, no, we're just going to straight up give you the basics. And it's so good. It's so, so interesting to read like that. And like, you fly through it. It's like really interesting. So I've just ripped my style of writing screenplays off of that. And it doesn't matter what type of thing, like Tai Chi Comes is written that way. And like a few things I've written since then have been written that way. And I just find it's like, makes it just by like slightly breaking from like the normal structure, it just makes it so much like easier to read and like more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and does it give your actors, I guess, a little more control or freedom over their character?
Definitely. Yeah. That's the thing too, that it's always weird for me to like read a screen, like, it makes sense if you're making like a fucking multi-$100 million movie and like you can cast whoever you want and like you can write a very specific character and cast exactly that. But on this level, it's like, I don't really know what these characters are going to look like. And like, it's like, I vaguely know their age and that's about it. So, you know, I know like their personality and stuff, but yeah, I don't even like when I introduce a character, it's just like their name and that's it. And then you should hopefully be able to get the rest just from the dialogue and like what they do. But yeah, in terms of like describing anyone's looks or like any specific details about them, like I never write any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I feel like, I guess, you know, do you get more like a more natural performance that way from your actors? Because instead of trying to remember the line they're supposed to say, they're just having a conversation with each other and you're filming it.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. For Tonight She Comes, it was great for like the cult members. They even like call, like, you know, I like slightly written out like in their voices, like the way that they're supposed to talk. So it was like a little bit written with like some misspelled words and stuff like that. But they actually even called, just like on their own, they had gotten together and they were just like going through like different dialects and stuff. And they just totally came up with that on their own, which was awesome. And they ran it by me, which was good too. Like, it would have sucked if they just completely just were like, this is what we're doing. You have no say in this. But I don't know. If I cast someone as a role, like I want them to just bring their own vision to it, and like anything that they can make it better, it just makes me look better. So like, it's win-win.
Yeah. We're talking about a collaborative art form.
Yeah, for sure. I agree 100%. Like, the more collaborative a film set, the better. It's just more fun too. Like, to like be watching, you know, be filming a scene and like see something surprising, even though you're the one that wrote that scene. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to a long time ago. I was talking to Owen Edgerton, who made Bloodfest and Mercy Black.
Yeah.
And Follow, which is a Christmas horror that I really love. And that's what he had kind of said, that, you know, you write one movie and you shoot a second movie and then you edit a third movie.
Oh yeah, so it definitely is true.
I want to back up a little bit, because there are some points here that are just really funny to me, because you've got Adam, who's just wandering around through the woods, and you know, somehow, you know, ends up across the lake from like the same place where you know, his buddy and, you know, and James ends up, and he just happens to have like the spyglass in his pocket, I guess. Yeah. I guess because he's a pervert, and these situations come up often for him, where he's spying on women from far away.
I can't even remember if we filmed it or not, but I had it's been so long, I don't remember if it was in the script or if it was just in my head or if we even filmed it, but there definitely was an earlier, I think we did actually film this, I think there was an earlier introduction to the spyglass. But then I was just like, fuck that. It's so much more funny if it just randomly pops up out of nowhere. It's never explained. And it just comes in the middle of the movie, like just out of his ass, basically. And I was just like, who cares if it, there's no reasoning behind it. It's just more entertaining. And like, usually got like a pretty good laugh of like, what the fuck is going on right now?
Yeah. I mean, it is funnier that way. I mean, you know, we don't need a separate scene where that has to be introduced. Like, it's just supposed to be, you know, this funny thing where obviously this guy is somewhat, you know, somewhat deranged.
But I mean, come on, in like, if you're randomly going on mail delivery trips, it's like, who knows what you're going to see. Even from the back, he's jerking off in the back seat. He might see something he wants to look at.
Yeah. But I think it's one of the things that's really funny to me is like, he needs a spyglass to see them.
Oh yeah.
But they can apparently see his dick, but later. You know, yeah.
This is another sort of shuffling around with the masturbation too. Like, originally it actually played out a little bit differently, and okay, it was a change where I was like, if it doesn't quite make sense, I don't really care. Like, originally they see him masturbating at a different spot and they are a lot closer to him, but the scene just sucked. So like, I cut it out and then I just reworked things a little bit to where,
yeah,
this way it's just, it was much more entertaining and funnier, even though it doesn't exactly make sense that they can see him from that far away.
Yeah, and when you're talking about low budget filmmaking, I mean, you have to come sometimes use what you have, right? It's not like you can just get everybody out for, you know, and do a bunch of reshoots if you didn't like how, you know, something turned out.
Yeah, for sure. The only reshoots I did on this movie were with, it was like just me and Adam, and the other great thing about him having a B plot where it's just him is that like, he and I can just go out and I can bring my red and we can shoot a scene. Like, there's a good number of scenes where it's just me and him shooting something out there and there's literally no one else. And it's like, all right, he's not really saying anything. So like, we don't even need to capture audio for this. But yeah, if in terms of like getting a legit crew and like a full or like multiple cast members and stuff, that's, it's just a pain in the ass. It's too expensive for like a low budget indie to do realistically.
Right. Yeah. And then the other thing sort of in this, around the same point when they find James, you know, sleeping in the hammock, is the gun from Rewind, makes another appearance. It looks, at least it looks like the same gun.
Oh, it is. Yes. It is the exact same gun. It is in the meantime become a water pistol. but I just love that gun. It's just such a cool looking gun. So it's, I don't know. It'll probably will show up in like every movie that I make in some way.
it'll be your Delta 88.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah.
Oh, a funny little side story about that gun too. I actually lost it on the during the making of Rewind. In one of the scenes where Adam's running and he's got it like in his tucked like down his pants, it fell out in the grass, and we looked for it for like an hour. It was like the middle of the night, and you know, it was tall grass, so like there's no way we're gonna find that. But that particular scene we actually had filmed on land that was owned by my aunt and uncle, and like 3 or 4 months later I get like a text from my cousin that's like, hey, is this yours? And like he was like mowing the grass and found it. So that's why it shows up once again, or else that thing would have been gone forever.
Oh, that's funny. That's yeah. Yeah, because a lot of Rewind, it does look like you're shooting in the middle of the night, and like you're just using like the night vision in the camera.
Yeah. Rewind, it was like we never use like a legit lighting setup or anything. It was all like even purposefully like we could have shot it on better cameras and stuff, but we just didn't want to.
But it's supposed to look like two guys who don't really know what they're doing out in the woods, like making this like, you know, supernatural reality show.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, for like, other than maybe a total of like 5 hours where we did have another person helping us with stuff, it was literally just the two of us. So it's just was fun to make it like that way also.
Yeah, it has I'm gonna be pretentious for a minute and say that it has that cinema verite vibe to it, where, you know, you're just kind of living in that moment, and it's not that you can necessarily tell that they're not following a script, but like it definitely doesn't feel scripted. Like it feels like again, just like a natural conversation and a natural, you know, interaction between people.
Yeah, that one for sure. Like Tonight She Comes obviously had like a full script, and like we followed it pretty closely, other than some improv and stuff. But Rewind, it was scripted out in terms of like what was going to happen, but the actual dialogue really wasn't scripted at all, other than a few key moments. So like it really was just us like as the characters letting things play out. So like we'll do like multiple takes of something, and like each one is like totally different, which I think made it work for that style of movie. And it's also really funny to me, the reception to that movie is just 100% based on whether or not you enjoy these douchebags. Because people that don't like those characters like fucking hate the movie, and then anyone that's like, oh yeah, they're entertaining, they like it.
Yeah, I mean that's fair, I guess. You know, if you're entertained by what you're seeing, then, you know, then you're gonna respond positively to it. I guess that makes some sense. But I personally allow a lot of leeway where I'm like, okay, I know I'm not supposed to really like this person or get, you know, get overly attached. I'm just gonna, you know, sort of enjoy what's here while it's here. And it's sort of like you said, like with the typical like slasher tropes, where, you know, like the really annoying character that might be more interesting than, you know, the final girl or whatever, just because they have the showier role, they have more sort of outlandish things to do, and you know they're going to get killed off sooner, typically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's probably in any movie I ever make, it's like there will never be a character that's like the standard final girl who's really boring, who actually makes it to the end. Like that kind of character will just, I mean, hopefully that character just won't even exist at all because they're just so boring. But if there was that kind of character, they probably would die immediately.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a fun subversion, too, of, you know, because that's, it's just such a well ingrained trope at this point.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel like anything, I feel, especially at this point where like so many slashers have been made, I feel like it's kind of just pointless to make like a standard slasher. Like, cause there's already been so many good ones that it's like at this point, like what else are you possibly going to add to it without like doing something weird or different?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say like, unless you're going to do something like really, unconventional, like a Leslie Vernon or like a Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah. Both masterpieces in my opinion.
But those are both movies that take that and really kind of turn it on its head and explore it and say, but most of them, like, they're just following the formula.
Oh yeah. Well, also to go on a little tangent about Leslie Vernon, it shocks me how many people have not heard of that movie that like horror movies. It's really crazy because the movie is so good. It like blows my mind that everyone hasn't seen it.
It really is. And it does the thing where like the first half or even I think maybe even 2/3 of that movie are like a mockumentary, like found footage style. And then there's like a moment where it just switches and it becomes like a narrative film where like they put the camera away and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, what's going on here? Because they put the camera away, but I'm still seeing them. And it just becomes like a straight narrative for like that final act. That's a brilliant film and a great, like great performance from Nathan
Basil. That's
like
a hard one to pull off too, but it's still fucking great once they switch formats.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just pulls the rug out from under you, and it's funny because like it has the cameos, you know, because you have Robert Englund and what's that guy? I'm blanking on his name, but you know, Jason, Kane Hodder.
Kane Hodder, yeah.
You know, you have like that sort of like what could feel and be very gimmicky casting, but they make it work.
Oh yeah, it's a fucking shame that more people haven't seen that movie.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. That's a great movie. Bringing it back to Tonight She Comes, you've got the movie gets compared to It Follows and stuff like that. But to me, I always thought it was more like it was like literally like a Friday the 13th meets an Evil Dead, because those are literally like the two different like setups that are just colliding.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense to me. That like, I love It Follows, but I don't know why my movie would ever get compared to It Follows. I know it has, but it's, to me, it's like nothing like It Follows at all. It almost like couldn't be more different. I mean, it does have a character that follows other characters, so I guess right. It makes sense.
from the point that she wakes up, which is a great moment, by the way, with Adam, and he really sells it well because he's just out in the woods, just out in the woods taking a leak, and all of a sudden he's yeah. I'm like pissing on this dead body.
Yep.
And then he finds this naked dead body in the woods, and of course his first instinct is to take pictures of it.
I feel like that's one of his more relatable traits. Cause I mean, if you're like, sure, you're also probably calling the cops or like calling someone, but like, I don't know. Do you take the picture or do you not want to have any evidence that you were there? Well, so I feel like on one hand, it's such a weird fucking thing to see that you want to be like, you want to document this. But on the other hand, you don't want it. You don't want to somehow get caught up in this.
Right. Well, it's funny to me because there's a moment where he takes off his beanie cap and he's like wiping down like the part of her arm that he pissed on.
He's
trying to get rid of the evidence, but then he just sort of casually tosses the hat off to the side. Like it's still right there. Like they're going to find it right next to her body.
He is not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Right. Yeah. But then she kind of wakes up. This is a moment that got me, and I don't think I even noticed it until like maybe my second probably my third or fourth time watching the movie, is when she opens her eyes that first time, which is a great moment. And he takes his jacket off, and he's wearing this T-shirt that says "Things just got weird."
Yeah, that's a great That's a great moment of just like hiring good people on your movie, because the costume designer, he just like he was out getting clothes. He sends me this picture for Pete, and I was like, hell yeah, that's a good find.
Yeah, because it's just revealed right at the right moment. But you don't, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, I don't know, if you're not really like paying attention, you may not even you may not even notice.
There's something I also do love about little moments like that, where there's some others that are, there's honestly probably some that no one's ever noticed and no one ever would notice, but it's just funny to me. Like there's a couple like song lyrics of just random radio songs that are playing, okay, but it's like at pretty low volume, so it's like not really meant for you to hear what they're saying, but it does fit in and it's funny to me.
Yeah,
with like what's being said in this song and to what they like what's happening.
So I noticed one, I think, and it didn't occur to me there would be others, but there is in the opening stinger where they're driving down the road listening to the radio, and it's cutting back and forth between them and Christy, who's sort of like running through the woods. And it's sort of right, I guess it's like, yeah, it's like right before the title card, where you have this full frame shot, and she's got this giant pregnant belly, and the guy on the radio is singing the word baby, like right at that moment.
Yeah, it's just like little moments like that. What's really funny too is in like the first, not even like the first cut of the movie, but the first version of the movie that played at like festivals and stuff, I actually had different music at that point. And it kind of was like the same vibe, but the music I have in there now is so much better and fits perfectly in my opinion. But yeah, it was like a little more like serious, and it's like funnier to me now, like the way that it just lines up with everything.
Again, I didn't really pick up on it until, yeah, probably the the third or fourth viewing. It's one of these movies that like every time I watch it, I sort of notice something new, because there's a lot of little subtle things going on that may not register sort of immediately, but yeah, once you know the full context of the movie, that sort of takes on its own meaning.
There's another little tie-in with the music there too, where the friend of mine whose band that is, who plays that song, he has a dog named Pete. And that's where Pete's character inspiration came from, 100%.
Okay. We talked a little bit about the cult. The cult part is again, like, I think it's really where things start to, the horror elements of it really start to pick up steam. We're introduced to Jenna McDonald, who is another really incredible actress. She really gets into her role. I mean, she's doing all kinds of just really nasty, bloody stuff in that in the final act. And you've got Frankie Ray, and you know, they have this whole unit. They've been doing their own thing this whole time, sort of unbeknownst to us and unbeknownst to, you know, the main characters.
Yeah, they're just like off in the shadows until really like fully halfway into the movie.
What I really love about this moment when all this starts to come together, like you know, Christy sort of pops up out of the lake, and Ashley is sort of like fending her off with an oar, and you've got Lindsay, who is just like completely
shit-faced. Yeah.
They're still all fucking with each other, like, while all this shit is going on. There's a lot of energy in that scene. It's really funny.
Yeah, that one, I really love that one, too. That's definitely just goes back to, like, the whole, like, me and friends, like, getting into crazy shit. You know, not as crazy as, like, we're about to be murdered, but, you know, like, semi, like, dire situations. And we're just, of course, just, like, fucking around with each other, like, like fucking idiots. That were, you know, if we were in a horror film, we would be dead for sure. But I don't know, it's just so much fun.
yeah, it is a lot of fun. Yeah, and like I said, Jenna McDonald sort of comes in at this point, and Frankie Ray, who's probably, I guess he's probably like the most experienced actor in the movie at this.
Yeah, he was the last actor that we hired for the movie, and he was the only, so we filmed the whole thing in Missouri, And other than Frankie, all of the actors were local to there. And Frankie, we brought in from LA for like 2 days, and it was just a wild, hilarious 2 days of filming. And it was super sad when he left. But yeah, that dude's awesome. I haven't seen him for a little while due to the whole pandemic and whatnot. Sure. But yeah, that guy is so great. Like, even in real life, he is like the funniest person to hang out with, and like, highly recommend like getting a drink with that dude and just talking about anything. You'll be highly entertained.
Yeah. He's fantastic. But Jenna McDonald really, I think, carries the second half of this movie.
Yeah, she totally does. And I definitely was super stoked that like the general consensus was that she was one of the highlights for sure, if not the highlight of the whole movie. And that definitely, when I was writing it, that was in mind too. Like, kind of like one of the main concepts of it was like, all right, what if these like quote unquote, even though they're pieces of shit, like good guy characters and these like horrible, like cultist quote unquote evil people meet up in the middle of the movie, have to work together. And then like, basically she is the main character of the movie, even though she doesn't show up until like 45 minutes into it. But that was definitely something that I thought when I was writing it, that would be a lot of fun. And Jenna pulled it off like perfectly. And it was really funny too, because she actually had not done a lot of acting beforehand. Like, most of her film work had been more like behind the scenes. And we were actually doing a read through of the script after she had been cast. And like, one of the camera people was like, damn, like Jenna did really, like she fucking nailed that role. Like, I wish that she actually was playing her. And I was like, she is. Like, they had known each other before from like working on other stuff, like behind the scenes. So it was like a really funny moment of like, yeah, this makes sense why we have cast her as this role. It's like, she's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. And that does make a lot of sense, because like, she's really like literally and figuratively, she's getting her hands dirty in this role.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, she's her hands, her teeth. She's got that like gross, like tooth dirt going on the whole time.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's like how different she looks in this movie from like every other movie that she's in. It's quite the change of appearance.
Yeah. It really is. She does great, and she sells it. She sells it really well. And I mean, I didn't even, she was in Revisions also. And I mean, I think, you know, pretty like unrecognizable from her role here.
Yeah, Revisions, I would say, is more like how she actually looked at the time in real life. And then, yeah, Tonight She Comes was just like, the Jenna that you don't want to see out on the street.
Yeah, but she did. I mean, but her character is great, and she kind of anchors this second half, and she's the one that kind of figures everything out and like, okay, this is what we need to do to, you know, to get out and to get out of this and survive this. of course, James finds a way to fuck it all up, which is just great. And I won't give away like the ultimate ending.
Also to not spoil it, but the James fucking everything up, that was definitely a moment when I was writing where I was like, is this like a, like, should I do this? Like, this seems like a weird, crazy thing to do. And then I was like, no, fuck it, that's totally what he would do.
No, it does, like, yeah.
It definitely, it's just in the, like, to me, the most fun thing about screenwriting, it, like, I really hate writing with an outline, or, you know, I like vaguely know where I want to go with the story, but it's so much more exciting for me to write a story where like I vaguely know how it's going to end up, but that's it. And then like, it's seems like pretentious or douchey to say, but like the characters really just do their own thing. And it's like surprising to me sometimes where I'm like, I'm writing them, but I'm like, oh shit. Like, I didn't think you were going to do that.
But those are the most interesting characters, right? Because you're basically creating a person and then saying,
yeah, okay, yeah, exactly.
What would this person do in this situation?
Yeah, I feel like that's a lot more, it's just more interesting and like more entertaining to like that style versus like having to fit a character into something that's like already predetermined.
Right, right. Where the story has to navigate to these points, so
yeah, exactly.
We're just going to make them do that regardless of whether it makes sense or not. I get it, yeah.
Yeah, and especially for a horror film where it's like, yeah, you can just kill off a bunch of characters and it's fine. It's like probably a lot tougher to write that way if you're doing some sort of like more serious, like dramatic movie or something. And it would be like, why did everyone die in some strange like satanic cult at the end? Like, this is really like taking a hard left turn.
Right, right. Yeah, but it's a lot of fun, and you've got probably really from like the halfway point on, yeah, everything really, really starts to move. You've got I think another Friday the 13th. Yeah,
I feel like as some people that don't fully love the movie would say, the halfway point is where it starts to be good. Like, I don't agree with this, but even to me, the second half is the better half of the movie by far.
I mean, the second half, yeah.
I don't think the second half is
the payoff.
Yeah, it wouldn't play, like, if it just started right there, like, it wouldn't have the same, like, you kind of need the intro for, but yeah, it's really, like, all of the crazy, exciting stuff happens in the second half, but it just kind of makes sense to have a movie be like that.
Yeah, yeah, it does, but you're, but that first half, there's a lot of stuff that's set up there that's paid off, like, the whole thing, there's this whole, like, running joke about, you know, about Lindsay being a virgin or not, and there's the conversation around that, and you don't really give it a second thought, because you kind of process it as like Ashley's just giving them, it's just giving him shit, and is just fucking with him,
yeah,
and then that kind of pays itself off in the final act, in ways that you really don't expect.
Yeah, that whole like topic, like not necessarily whether anyone was telling the truth or not, but like the whole, like the fact that they're talking about that earlier on totally comes back later, and the whole like there is like reason for all the like period talk earlier on, and like yeah. There's a reason for that being there.
Yeah, you've got it might be the first ever cinematic. You've got Chekhov's tampon and Chekhov's cherry poppin', I guess.
Yeah, exactly. What you call it.
So yeah, it's fantastic, and the special effects here in the final act are just crazy. Yeah, especially that final scene, which I think as I understand, I mean that got cut out in some of the foreign releases.
So the whole scene didn't get cut out, but it did get cut into a form where it really does make it confusing as hell. And you're like, what? I have no idea what's happening here. And what really sucks, what pisses me off about that, it was fine that it had to be released like that. Like, I don't care. But that was the first version of the movie that hit like Blu-ray. And so it was the version that got torrented. So like thousands of people that have seen the movie by stealing it have seen the shitty version of the movie. And like, that's what pisses me off. I'm like, if you're going to steal a movie, like at least watch the good version of it that makes sense and has like the all the best gore is not cut out.
Right, right. So yeah. So speaking of that, I mean, are we going to get a full sort of uncut Blu-ray?
So there have been a couple uncut Blu-rays, but they're all like foreign releases. There, I believe at some point there is going to be a US one that I can't really say anything about, and I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen at some point, but I have no idea when. But okay. I will say for like the DVD version or the streaming or whatever, like if you're in the US, like it is like the full uncut version of the movie at least. So it's really only in a handful of countries where you're getting like a shittier, shorter version of it. But almost everywhere they did release like the proper version.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. And I figured that like at least like the streaming version, the digital version is, you know, sort of like your unrated.
Yeah, it's cut definitely of the movie. The unrated, like it's like the real cut of the movie.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I've been waiting for the Blu-ray for for a while now. Maybe not quite as long as you have, but
no, I hope it happens soon. And I honestly, I wish they would just put it out on 4K streaming too, because I have a 4K file of the movie just like sitting on a hard drive waiting, but they didn't want to. I don't know if it's just like an additional cost to make that happen, or I'm sure it is, but it does suck in a way, because it was like right as 4K streaming was just hitting. And I'm like, we could have put this out in 4K and like it would have gotten on more eyes, because there weren't that many 4K streaming movies at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Even now I'm surprised there aren't as many as there should be, I think.
Yeah. There really should be. Cause like, I will say too, like having seen like the 1080 version of the movie looks great, but having seen like the 4K in a theater, it looks so much better.
Yeah, I can
so
imagine.
Nice. It's like so crisp and so pretty.
I mean, because the film looks great as it is. I mean, it's shot really well, and it looks amazing. And you've done work, you know, sort of since then on other films as a cinematographer and camera operator and things like that. Because I know that you shot Clickbait. Yeah, I talked to Sophia about that.
I've worked on a bunch of stuff with Sophia and Michael, who is her husband, and they both separately do a bunch of stuff, and they also do a bunch of stuff together. And they're like the most fun people to work with ever. So like, I love working with them. And I actually met them because of Tonight She Comes, because we were both at a film festival with our respective movies, and that's how we met. But yeah, they're fucking great. So like, I would gladly work on any of their movies. Which I actually have worked on another one since. Who knows when it's going to come out now due to, you know, the current situation of the world. And I probably can't even say anything about it, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. So when we talked, I mean, she talked a little bit about the Once in Future Smash.
It was the Once in Future Smash.
I'm really looking forward to that. Cause I'm a big fan of Michael St. Michael's, and just hearing the concept behind it sounds really funny.
It's such a funny movie, and like just hanging out with those guys for a weekend was like, it was a blast. We had quite a good time. It's so funny to think too, that's like the last sort of like that kind of thing that I've worked on since COVID. And like, it was so like right on the cusp of like, we were filming at a convention right before like COVID broke out here. Like if that had been scheduled for a few weeks later, like we couldn't have shot it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing to think about. And how many projects are kind of in either in that boat or in the other boat where like they waited like 1 week too long and now they might never get made.
Yeah. It's really crazy. Like it sucks. Like it will be great once the vaccines are out or whatever, and it's it's not a thing anymore, however long that'll be. But like, even just just thinking about the logistics of doing a Tonight She Comes budgeted level movie would be very hard right now, which sucks.
Right. Yeah.
Like to do safely.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to Aaron Kuntz. He's shooting something right now, and he was saying that like everything is, you know, like 20% more expensive now because there's restrictions, and there's all these zones, and there's testing and different sort of frequencies and levels of testing depending on, you know, sort of what part of the film you're working in, and and then you have to have like a compliance officer to manage all that. Everything's just getting more complex.
Yeah, unless I have like a movie that I really want to make as like the next movie or something that is kind of like a bubble movie, where if we could work it out to like get everyone tested COVID free and then just no one leaves the whole time while we shot it, that could maybe work. And it is the type of movie that could work for that, but who knows? I'm sure it's still like would be a huge pain to get it set up.
Yeah. But I couldn't imagine.
Would be great if that became possible, because that's something that I really love, and I really want to make it so bad.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. Well, hopefully we'll be able to, you know, things will, you know, we keep saying get back to normal, and I don't know what that means anymore, but that things will get back to a point where, you know, we can do things that we, you know, that somewhat resemble, you know, what we used to do.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's weird to think that this, definitely of my adult life, but even probably of my child life, this by far is the least movies I've seen in a theater ever.
Oh, I know.
And it's weird. It's so weird to think. I mean, especially as someone that sees, you know, usually as many movies as possible theatrically and stuff. It's like so weird to like, I did see Tenet was the last movie that I saw. I like drove at, you know, a ways out to where theaters were open out here and saw it.
Oh, that's cool.
And I kind of thought the movie sucked, but I still had a fucking blast because it was great to be in like a theater that was like insanely loud, you know, on the big screen. And it was like, there was like no one there too. So it was, you know, so I felt safe and like, I didn't get COVID. So that was good.
Right. But yeah. I think the last one I saw was The Hunt.
Oh yeah.
It was the Thursday.
That might've been the last one I saw before Tenet.
Yeah. I went to the Thursday night screening, I think like before Friday the 13th, back in March. And, I haven't set foot in a theater since. We've talked about it, because like
it's such a weird experience. Like when I did see Tenet and it was like so dead in a theater that normally there'd be a shitload of people there. And it's like, we did purposely like see it pretty late at night. So like, ideally there wouldn't be a lot of people there, but it was like, there were like five people in a theater that holds like 600 people. And it was bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a strange experience. I've had those experiences, but like usually it's like going to a theater like on a weekday and, you know, maybe like in a neighborhood where it's, where not a lot of people go to the movies or something. But it's always like a weird feeling, like walking into a giant theater and it's completely empty.
Yeah, I feel like what kind of sucks too, like it's great that drive-ins are getting a lot of business, but I don't really want to see like a movie that I really want to see for the first time at a drive-in. Like drive-ins are great for like a classic movie or like something you can just kind of like fuck around while you're watching it. But yeah, you know, for like something you really want, like a pristine audiovisual experience, you know, it's not exactly the best place to go. Like I think like Possessor maybe played at some drive-ins, but I just watched it on demand and cranked the sound way up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what you have to do. And I mean, I think this might be, you know, the whole pandemic thing might be good for like the home theater business. Yeah. There's a lot of people already like, I mean, I remember talking to people 10, 15 years ago that were like, I would rather, you know, I have a home theater set up and I would rather pay, you know, $30 or $40 to get a new release and be able to watch it at home and just have a few friends over, you know, and you're already saving money from like what you would spend in the theater.
Yeah. In a lot of ways I would also like that. I feel like the only thing, cause like I have like, you know, a nice like 4K TV, it's pretty big. And like, I put it ridiculously close to where I sit too. So like, it seems big, you know, like even bigger than it should. The only thing that's lacking though, that I feel most people are lacking is it's like really hard to get that crazy loud sound system.
Yeah.
Unless you really have like a dedicated theater set up or like if you live in an apartment, it's like impossible without just pissing off all the neighbors. I mean, I've played some movies really loud at late hours, but I feel like I have really good sound barriers because I never hear my neighbors. So either I'm just like the one asshole or like the sound dampening is pretty good.
Right. It's hard to replicate that experience because they just have so much more room and you know, they can pump a lot more wattage through there than you can at home. But
yeah, exactly. And I feel like this is even fitting to the Tonight She Comes talk too, because since it does open with this film should be played loud.
right, exactly.
Yeah, it's like a movie not played loud, it just sucks.
Yeah,
it's like you just don't get the full impact of it.
Yeah, and there is, and there's a lot of impactful moments. I mean, the sound mix and the soundtrack and everything on Tonight She Comes is really fun. There's a lot of moments with like distorted dialogue and stuff where you're messing with the audio and stuff where you have somebody that's sort of like, you know, speaking like demonically or whatever. And yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's the louder it is, the more fun it gets.
Yeah, I think Sean Duffy, who is the sound designer on the film, did a fucking great job. And like he's awesome, and he's worked on so much cool shit since this movie too, and before it too, which is how I had heard of him. But like Joe Bigas's Bliss, which was like one of my favorite movies last year.
Oh, yeah.
He worked on that, and like a bunch of stuff, like a bunch of just really fucking rad like indie movies. This guy, he works on cool shit.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm cool. Glad that Tonight She Comes is a part of his his IMDb credits.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's awesome. Joe Bigas is a madman, I tell you what.
I last year at Fantastic Fest I saw his two movies like back to back. It was pretty wild.
Yeah. And they're both like Bliss is a 16mm film.
Yeah. Right?
Which is just insane on an indie budget. I can't.
It looks so good. I love that.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah, it looks amazing. And then he did VFW. It came out the same year, and like that one, I remember reading an interview, and like there's a lot of scenes like in that bar where he's got like eight characters on camera, you know, like in the same scene.
And no, that's like tough stuff to pull off too, for sure.
Yeah, so he's ambitious for sure, and I think. Yeah, both those movies rock. Mind's Eye is great.
That is also a lot of fun.
Yeah. Cool, man. Where can people, you know, sort of find you, interact with you? Is there anything, you know, that you're working on that you can talk about or wanna plug? What's going on with you these days?
So I'm pretty much on like all the social medias, but I like hardly ever post. So I'm not like, you certainly can like send something to, like if you watch one of my movies or something and like tweet at me, I'll respond for sure. But I don't know. I'm not like a heavy poster, but I'm like on there just like lurking or like talking to people every once in a while. So that's a good way, like Twitter, Instagram, just like at my name. And then currently, like, it's been a weird year for working on stuff, but I started working on some like video game related things that I'm pretty stoked about, which is like a newer venture for me. And who knows like when any of it will be like available or, you know, whatnot, but still semi horror themed. More very like indie retro pixel art kind of stuff, but I actually have a few ideas for films that I would be like, especially now, but really at any time would be really hard to make. And then I had the thought of like, oh, this actually could be a pretty kick-ass video game, and so sort of I'm working along those lines right now on some stuff. And then there's like a few other things going on that I can't really say anything about. More just because there's just nothing to announce yet for it, but there's definitely stuff coming up. Hopefully, I don't know. Honestly, probably the first might be the like video game related things. That's kind of like in terms of personal projects what I've been working on the most lately. But yeah, if you are a fan of horror, which I assume you probably would be, and also do like some sort of like retro gaming kind of things, that's something like once that gets to a level where it's like at a level of polish where I feel comfortable about posting anything with it, I'm going to start posting like a shitload of that kind of stuff. Cause I'm pretty stoked on that right now.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Sounds cool. It's great. All right. So everyone, so Matt Stewart's on, you know, like Instagram and Twitter. You can hit him up. I'll maybe put a few links in the show notes, along with, you know, links to, you know, where you can find Tonight She Comes, It's digitally everywhere, and you know, keep your ear to the ground for, you know, like Blu-ray and DVD stuff. I will certainly be posting about that as soon as I hear about it.
Hell yeah. I hope to hear news on that sometime soon, but who knows.
yeah, that'd be awesome, man, because this is one where, you know, I just love to have that on the shelf, because the artwork, we didn't really talk about the artwork or anything like that, but the artwork associated with the with the release, like the posters and stuff, all look fantastic as well.
Yeah, I was super happy with how the art turned out for the movie that I had commissioned for it. And honestly, even the like quote unquote official like US release art, I kind of like. I was kind of expecting it to suck due to like, you know, how often movies with like cool, there's so many movies that have like cool festival posters and stuff, and then their official art's just garbage. Yeah. So I was like, oh, cool. Like, this actually looks pretty sweet. And then for the soundtrack, Wojciech had some new art made for that. And I think that art's fucking dope too. Like, it looks super cool. It's just like, there's just like a crazy close up of like Christie's face coming out of like bloody water that looks really cool. And that's like something I had literally no involvement in. He just like got someone to do the art for that, but I was like, it looks great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's awesome. It's always like my running joke with some of these distributors is that they have like their, you know, like they have their 17-year-old nephew with the Photoshop.
Photoshop.
And,
yeah.
You know, and that's who they have to do the posters.
They also have like, two or three just like stock designs that were there, like, we can make this work for any movie. Like, we'll just Photoshop a different hand on this. Sweet. It's good to go.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you lucked out here, because I think the art looked fantastic. I was saying the other day that, like when you go into like the old school bars, you get like the bar mirrors, like with the, you know, the beer logos or whatever on them.
Yeah.
I'd love to see I think a lot of this artwork would look great like on a mirror, glass. Like, it would look fantastic. Cool stuff.
I really should, like, I'm just like too lazy to stuff like this. That's not, you know, like directly making a movie or something, but I really should like make some shirts or something like that at some point. Cause I feel like there's some cool designs that I could. So maybe one day if I feel like it, I'll be some kind of like merch.
Yeah, put out some merch. But,
and it probably wouldn't even have any logos or anything. So like, even if you haven't even watched the movie, hopefully it just would look cool and you can just wear it anyways.
Right.
I'm like a big fan of the horror shirts that have, other than like the artwork, have no reference to what movie it is. I'm like, do I really need a shirt that says Halloween? I'm like, no.
Yeah. No, it's like this inside joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great. I bought, we were talking about the pandemic and stuff earlier. I've been buying up masks. And one of my favorite ones is, I have a mask that just says, Elite Hunting Club on it. Nice. And it has like the Bloodhound, you know, logo from Hostel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like little subtle stuff like that, and the stuff that says like Camp Crystal Lake Counselor or something like that.
Just like the T-shirts or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool stuff. That's the kind of horror stuff I like, because like I'm not gonna go to Walmart with like a T-shirt that's got like, you know, like people like dripping with blood on it. Just because I don't need to deal with, you know, like reactions from people for shit like that. But I'll wear something that has like, you know, like a more like subtle reference, where like people who know what it is will get it.
I totally would wear just like a blood dripping shirt. Although I'm just gonna go on a tangent about shirts right now for a minute. But people need to make more V-neck shirts, because I like lately I actually don't even wear like tees with designs at all, just because the V-neck is just so much more comfortable. So I'm just like rocking a black V-neck. I have like 50 of them, so it's just like every day same shirt. Like, but I would totally wear these same shirts if they had cool designs on them, but it's just so hard to find like a V-neck with a sweet design. But in a related note too, I also have, so for every movie, I don't know if this is douchey or not, but to me, it's a good way to get a tattoo because like, I'm never going to get sick of it. But I have two tattoos on one of my arms, one for Rewind and one for Tonight She Comes. And the Rewind one's, it's super obvious. It's just the Rewind symbol. The Tonight She Comes one, in my opinion, is great because if you've seen the movie, you know exactly what it's in reference to. And it's like in reference to a horrific thing. But if you haven't seen the movie, it looks totally innocent.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's, yeah, it's like if I had gotten like the depiction of what this actually looks like in the movie, it would have been like, okay, I've got to like cover up my arm to go into some places. But the way it is now, it's like looks totally innocent if you don't know what it's in reference to.
Oh, that's cool.
Which it's in reference to the final scene of the movie.
Oh, that's awesome.
It like makes me laugh every time.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. All right, Matt, I'm gonna let you go and sort of leave it there. I know it's pretty late for you. Thanks for coming on and spending some time, you know, talking through this. I really appreciate it. Definitely want people to check it out. Keep tabs on Matt Stewart's and his other projects, forthcoming. Really excited about that. Matt, thank you very much.
Hell yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, same here.